What's trending in Seattle?
There were three armed robberies in just 2 hours in Seattle. Two in North Seattle, one in South Seattle. Happened earlier this morning / last night. Police are looking for the suspects. Suspects are the same in each and every one of those robberies. They held up three convenience stores in quick succession. Detective Mark Jamieson of the SPD told our sister station, Cairo Radio, that, yeah, it does kind of look like they're all the same. That every single person who's behind this actually is behind the other one.
Fortunately, there were no injuries in any of these robberies, but we believe that it is quite likely the three robberies were committed by the same suspects.
So the investigation is ongoing. And to tell you how quickly it happened, one of these robberies happened as the cops were dealing with the first instance of robbery.
While detectives were investigating that robbery, a second armed robbery involving three suspects, one armed with a handgun, came out, this time in North Seattle.
Now, I suppose someone can look at something like this and say, okay, obviously we don't have this happening on a regular basis. And that is 100% true. We do not normally have a group of, you know, bad guys, thieves, hitting up a whole bunch of different convenience stores within a short period of time in Seattle or Everett or Tacoma or Olympia. That is absolutely true. But the question is, why are we having so many of these crime stories happening on such a regular basis? Not specifically this type of crime story, but we are starting to see what feels, at least to me, like an uptick of robberies. We certainly know what also is happening around the Seattle area is not just convenience stores getting robbed, but we also have homeless people running and breaking into individual businesses in and around Seattle. We've got the break-ins to your cars, to your homes. That's happening with some regularity, and the question is why? Well, the answer is really, really simple. We have a broken city government. This is what happens when there's a general breakdown of the law. This is a cultural issue of living in Seattle. We have a cultural issue, an environment in Seattle that allows criminals to get more brazen because they think they're going to get away with it. In fact, in their minds, they know they're going to get away with it. And this has nothing to do with whether or not the cops are good at what they do. We know that cops are good at what they do in Seattle and everywhere across the state of Washington. The problem is, number one, we've got a serious staffing problem that likely made this worse, that likely made it a lot easier for someone to feel so brazen that they're going to hit up three convenience stores and rob them, knowing that they're not really going to encounter that much police resistance, because we have staffing issues that for the longest time were made worse because the brass, the command staff over at the SPD, as much as I love them, they didn't speak up loud enough when they should have. And we have a mayor who didn't speak up loud enough when she should have, when Councilmember Shama Sawant decided to call all cops murderers, when people like Lisa Herbold and Lorena Gonzalez and Mike O'Brien wanted to pretend that cops are bad guys, that cops cannot be trusted. We didn't hear enough from this mayor. We didn't hear enough from some of the non-crazy anti-cop council members on that council speaking up. And all of a sudden, you've got bad guys feeling just a little bit more empowered to do this kind of thing. And when you have a breakdown of law in a city or a county or a state, you're going to see more instances of crime. We have, on top of everything else, a gang problem. And what happens when you've got a gang problem in a city that doesn't respect the rule of law with a police force that isn't properly staffed? Well, guess what? That gang problem gets worse. We now have the opportunity to change things. Ballots were mailed today. Some of you are going to get them tomorrow. Some of you are going to get them on Monday. Some of you live in Seattle. Some of you work in Seattle. Some of you know people who live and work in Seattle who are going to get the opportunity to shape the soul of Seattle, as Saul Spady often says on his show. And yes, I'm going to be a broken record, at least for the next 3 weeks, in that bad policies of Seattle spread. And if you think you're going to get away from all this because you live in Shelton or Sultan or Monroe or Olympia, understand you've already seen some of the bad policies hit your region. So if you know anyone in Seattle, make sure you're telling them to get involved and vote for the right people. Make sure that if you're in a neighborhood in which you're voting on a council race, you're doing your research. We've been spending a lot of time talking about the Snohomish County race, talking about the Bellevue City Council, talking about the mayoral race in Sultan. We're big fans of Russell Wieta. We're big fans of council member Jennifer Robertson, who's running in Bellevue. We're huge fans of Anna Rohrbaugh in Snohomish County. There are lots of races that will determine the direction of this region. Make sure you vote. Make sure you donate money if you can to campaigns you want to back. Make sure you're telling your friends and family that they need to vote. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
Speaking of elections, let's turn to the national election, in which you've got a whole bunch of Democrats with very, very fringe ideas trying to outfringe one another. And Elizabeth Warren has one particularly bad idea as it relates to health care, a plan that not only kicks you off of your private health insurance, whether or not you want to, because this plan of hers for Medicare for All would get rid of private health insurance, including, by the way, all the jobs that go along with it. Getting rid of that, it'll also raise your taxes, but she refuses to acknowledge it. Instead, she makes a very unsatisfying pitch to the American people that not only folks on the right are calling out, but folks on the left. In fact, last night on Tucker Carlson's show, which is the best show on Fox News.
Wow, Jason, are you going to be featured on it?
Tuesday night.
Wow.
Not only is it the best show, but on stuff like this, they're really good because they're producers, they're staff members who are the best producers and staff members in all of the TV land.
Ooh. Okay. Thank you for saying TV land at the end of that.
And I'm sure if they worked in radio, they'd be just as good.
Oh, good.
They were able to cut together in a montage a whole bunch of clips of Elizabeth Warren just being bad at selling her idea.
Will you raise taxes on the middle class to pay for it, yes or no?
Costs will go up for the wealthy and for big corporations and for hardworking middle class families.
Just real quick, what about the not so hardworking middle class families? Do they get hit with taxes?
Raise them all.
Are they going to get hit with huge fees? What about the low-income folks? Okay.
Costs will go down. Hard-working middle-class families are going to see their costs go down.
But will their taxes go up?
Well, but here's the thing.
I've listened to these answers a few times before.
Will middle-class taxes go up? Will private insurance be eliminated?
Not gonna answer.
What families have to deal with is cost. Total cost.
Okay. I agree that families have to deal with total costs. Parts of total costs also includes what they're paying for their health insurance, which is why she's not being honest. Because you as an individual or as a family right now, let's say you're spending X amount of dollars on healthcare, but also Y amount of dollars on your insurance. If your insurance numbers go away and you're spending more than you're currently spending right now on health insurance because of the coverage, well, that's bad, right? That's bad under her plan. And she's saying that's not going to happen. Okay, fine. What if you end up getting hit with more taxes than you otherwise would have spent all in under the current system? So let's say you get rid of your private health insurance and you got Medicare for All. And because of your new tax rates, instead of right now you're spending, let's just say, $2,000 a year, you end up spending $2,500 or $3,700, whatever it happens to be. That's a bad deal, yeah? And even folks on the left are getting mad.
That's what they have to deal with. How much are your costs going to go down?
No. Different question. How much will your taxes go up?
No, it's how much are your costs? Because it's how much families end up spending.
I know that argument, but will you pay more in taxes? Why don't you want to answer that question?
Because
Jake said, that's a Republican talking point. It's not a Republican talking point. It's a question.
It's a question about where people are going to come out economically. Look,
That's not my question.
Okay. Thank you, Tucker and his team, for coming up with that. By the way, the best team in TV on Fox, just FYI.
Best host that I've ever seen in my life. The greatest.
On TV.
Mm.
Okay, well, I'm just saying thank you for pointing all that out, Tucker. Because this is ridiculous, and I cannot imagine. I cannot imagine. Even the people who are on her side otherwise are looking at this and saying, oh, yeah, that's a totally straightforward answer. That's the kind of stuff we like from Elizabeth Warren. She tells it like it is. She's got a plan for that. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Holland. Did you know you can follow me on Instagram? Just fire up that Instagram app. Add the screen name Jason Rantz, J-S-O-N-R-A-N-T-Z. And you'll get to go behind the scenes of the show. Bothell Police Department, our friends over there, they low-key burned me on their Instagram story last night. I
roasted
love them.
You. Roasted
it, it, it did make me laugh, and I always back the blue, and I love the Bothell PD, but cut a little bit deep. It was a low-key cut, but it cut.
But who doesn't love Brock Huard?
Okay, shut up.
He has such great hair.
Okay, I hate you so much, but you can follow me and find out what it is I'm talking about on the Instagram app. Add the screen name Jason Rantz, J-S-O-N-R-A-N-T-Z. Push the button.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So I wanted to get to this yesterday. We just didn't have time. And I spent some time reflecting on the numbers involved in the Seattle NHL team and their season ticket prices. This is insane. And it's funny because it kind of shows you how much I acknowledge don't know about the world of purchasing tickets, seasons tickets, or otherwise, because I'm the privilege of I've got the privilege of being a media member. I don't pay for my tickets. They say, and then I'll let you acknowledge the question I asked you yesterday. They will cost season tickets between $285 and $355 for 44 game packages. What was the question I asked you?
If that was a ridiculous... Oh, no, you asked me if that was per game or per season.
I was like, $355 per season? I'm in. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, that'd be nuts.
I was off.
Very. Yeah. I had like 44 games.
So we're talking about $12,000 plus for a season ticket package to a team that doesn't exist yet. In a stadium that doesn't exist yet.
Mm-hmm.
In a city that I still don't think is fully going to get behind the NHL just yet, because it takes some time to actually sustain some kind of interest level, that's a lot.
And also a movement that's ruining the NBA, but whatever.
But still, $1,200
for... $12,000
for a season for a team that doesn't exist.
I know, it sounds
that's
ludicrous
to
even just like... say out loud, and that's what I kept reverting to, like, oh, 1,200. No, it's 12,000.
Yeah, 1,200 is like, okay, I can totally make that work, because, you know, you tell me $1,200 on something that, there's no doubt about it. When Seattle NHL team, whatever they end up getting called, the Kraken or whatever, it's going to probably be
Please be Pilots.
It's gonna
I want Pilots.
I want Freeze. Seattle Freeze would be fantastic. But let's say whatever they're going to call it, then they start to develop their team, and I'm assuming they'll have one or two players that maybe in the league people know, and everyone wants to get excited for something new and shiny. I would get involved for $1,200 for a season pass. But you're telling me $12,000 for one ticket?
Yeah, and you don't want to go by yourself.
No!
So you're going to buy two.
So you have to buy two! That's crazy to me. And then I was like, okay, maybe this is just the market for season tickets in this region. So I asked you to do some research.
I did research. Let me tell you what this research shows. The Seahawks season tickets, according to 2016.
And these are comparable seats.
These are equivalent. These are club-level seats, the cheapest club-level seat that I could find, because that's what we're basing the NHL off of. The Seahawks, they released their 2016 season ticket prices, so 3 years ago. It cost you $2,100 for an 8-game package, you get all the season ticket holder perks. That comes down to $262 a game. So, what? Cheaper?
It's almost what I thought. It would be.
And yeah, so that's $2,100 on the season. You go Mariners. You know, you get 81 games for $3,400. $3,400. That comes down to $42 a game if you go to all 81. Mm-hmm. That's a great deal. That's a screaming deal.
You don't have to... I know that they're, on our stations, but...
You go to the Sounders, you can get... one season ticket, club level price, $935. That gets you 17 games plus all the little side tournaments, CONCACAF, Open Cup, gets you into all those as well. That comes down to $55 a game for the 17 home games.
That, see, I would more compare the NHL to the MLS. In this city.
I think it's going to have similar... I think the fan groups are going to be very similar.
Right? You're going to have... The fan of soccer is probably going to be a fan of the NHL team. I don't remember off the top of my head what the amount... capacity is at the new Key Arena, but...
It's going to be 17 to 20, somewhere in there.
So you're not even going to get as many... It's got to be more than that. I'm pretty sure it's more than that. But you're not going to get 40,000 people...
No.
Who show up to CenturyLink for a Sounders game to be that consistent in a brand new sport. It's not going to happen.
But and NHL is the most expensive sport there. Like,
what about
throughout the
season
country.
Tickets on the Storm? Sexist. You didn't look it up, did you?
I didn't look it up.
What about the Rain? Sexist.
I didn't
look that up either.
Actually, I don't think you can't get those right now. There is a wait list. They sell very well.
Okay. Yeah. No, they don't.
The Rain?
Yeah.
They
in Tacoma?
They average like $3,500 a game, which
whoa!
Is like, which is what that Genie
whoa!
Stadium fills
whoa,
out. Sorry,
whoa,
they're playing
whoa.
At a baseball field.
Oh my gosh. Whoa, 3,300 people.
Ooh.
Okay, so that's just crazy. I am kind of curious from folks out there, especially if you are excited about the NHL. Send me a text message on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Doesn't 12,000 plus just sound like a lot?
It's
for
ridiculous.
One season ticket for the 44 games for a team that doesn't exist. 1-800-465-8770. Meanwhile, Patrick Mahomes, who's very pretty.
You like? Yeah, he's a good looking dude.
He is. Oh my God. I didn't know who he was. I've heard the name before. And then I looked him up. I was like, okay then. New most attractive football player is Patrick
really?
Mahomes. Oh,
number one?
Number one. Although, to be fair, I'm not counting kickers because kickers aren't football players. And I'm sure that they look good, too. I'm just saying he's a pretty boy.
Tom Brady's got a nice face.
Okay, stop it. He's too old. Patrick Mahomes, he's the new best thing. He's the last MVP. Turns out he might be out the entire season. Although, there's rumors going on as to what exactly happened.
They just talked about it today. He's going to miss roughly minimum 3 games. His MRI came out as good as possible.
Good.
He's going to miss 3 games minimum, could be up to 6.
For a dislocated knee...
Kneecap.
Cap.
And there's no or minor ligament damage around the
which
kneecap.
Which is... I mean, if this is going to happen to you, it happened in the best way possible.
100%.
As far as we can tell. Although, again, what teams put out at this point in the season, I'm always a little bit suspicious of...
Yeah.
But whatever. The good news is he's going to be okay. Last night, he, by the way, is the quarterback for that team.
Kansas City Chiefs.
I know. And they were playing that other team last night in the orange with Flacco.
Denver Broncos.
I was just about to say that.
That was a long pause for dramatic effect.
No, it was just dramatic. So it happened last night. There was some kind of play. And I watched it in real time. It didn't look as gruesome as people were talking about it on Twitter. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman had the call.
3rd and 4th and 1, picking up a first down. And it sets up 1st and goal. And
well, that's what I was talking about. He's at the bottom of that pile, and there's just a lot of bodies, a lot of people falling on top of you. And you know, I can tell you, a lot happens at the bottom of that. Just hope he's not re-aggravated that ankle.
Yeah, he did something way worse. Now, I did see the video of them what appears to be popping his kneecap back into place, which is, you just feel...
It's disgusting.
It's disgusting. But he did walk off the field. He was limping, sure, but he did walk off the field. So that goes to the point of, okay, maybe it's not as bad as it was. So this was kind of horrible for him. But it brought up the what's called the dreaded Madden curse, which is basically the last now 3 players who are on the cover of the Madden NFL video game. Antonio Brown, Gronkowski, and now him, all on the covers, all suffered very significant injuries right after they were put on the cover.
Well, and the Madden curse even goes deeper than that. Peyton Hillis back in 2012.
I know.
Sean Alexander, Seahawks fans will remember this.
Know him.
He broke his foot the year after
broken.
He was on Madden. Goes all the way back to Michael Vick.
Vick, for sure. I mean, and after that, he got caught with the dogs.
Well, and yeah, he did.
And then he
also got an injury in the preseason.
Injury in the preseason. That happened.
Yeah. Dante Culpepper found himself on the Madden curse.
Everyone knows that.
There's only a handful of guys who have ever got away from the Madden curse.
Knowing that, the next time any player is like, hey, Russell Wilson, Mr. Highest Paid Player in the NFL, we're going to put you right smack on that cover.
Say no.
Of Matt. Just say no. Please say no. You know what's good for you. We got a text in the 253. I used to get Chicago Blackhawk tickets for that much up against the glass. So he got really good tickets for $12,500 or so. And then the 425, I'm getting season tickets to the Seattle NHL and hope to spend around $85 per game. You do have to be wealthy to get club level. Also, I love soccer, he said. Soccer's the best thing ever.
Wow, that's a great text.
I mean, he said he hates soccer.
Mercer Island, Des Moines.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Shoreline, Woodinville, Erie.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time, 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. Means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Sean Keller and Smiles by Design. Concept very simple to understand. Media's hyper-focus on the city of Seattle, they end up ignoring all the cities that you actually live in and care about most. So we do the opposite. We're focused on you and your communities, and we ignore Seattle. And we start in Edmonds, where their school district is trying to hire more teachers of color. Michael Cook, a PE teacher in the Edmonds School District, tells Cairo TV that, hey, we're trying to do better.
We're doing our very best to change the culture of school district.
And so what he decided to do was come together for a teachers conference specifically for teachers of color. And he says it was a huge success.
Conference was a huge step because I don't know of anything anywhere in the country where teachers of color have an opportunity to gather. And safety is probably one of the most powerful things that they say they need and want.
Now, I don't know if safety is the right term in this context. I'm assuming he means comfort, not literal physical safety. And if so, then there's some significant problems in the city of Edmonds. But I doubt that's actually what he means. Now, of course, the Edmonds School District, they're not the only ones doing this. We hear this happening all across the state of Washington and really all across the country. And really, we've heard some bizarre arguments behind it as to why this is necessary. Usually what you hear is it's important to have teachers who look like you so you'll feel more comfortable in the classroom and perform better as a student of color. And if that is true, it's a bad argument, because what you're essentially supporting is segregation, which is horrific. You don't actually want to do that, right? This whole idea that an African-American student will perform better in a classroom that's taught by an African-American, or a Latino student taught more will retain the information, perform better in a classroom with a teacher that's Latino. If that is true, then you're arguing in favor of segregation if that's the reason why you want more diversity in the classroom. I would argue you want more diversity in the classroom because I think you just generally have a better sense of, you know, societal issues when you understand that, yes, there are people who look a little bit different than me or think a little bit different than me or believe in a God that's different than what I believe in. I think there's value to that. But if the argument is you have to do this if you want to raise the test scores and performance of African-Americans or Latinos or Asian, whatever happens to be, whatever group, then you're basically saying when you hire a black teacher that you only care about the black students and not your white ones or Latino ones or Asian ones or Native American ones, right? It's just not a good argument to me. And yet I usually see that in the Seattle Times, that specific argument. This is why we need to do it. Okay, but then you're saying that you don't care about the white students or the Latino students, and should we not care about everybody? Is the only way to perform in a class to get a good performance out of the students is to get a teacher that looks like them? Or maybe it's a little bit deeper than that. And maybe they'll say, you know what, it impacts African-American students, but not Asians. It impacts Latinos, but not white people. Like, whatever happens to me, be a little bit more clear about that, because it kind of drives me nuts. And I say that as someone who went to a school with mostly when I was in high school, at least, I didn't have very many teachers that looked like me. I didn't have a whole bunch of white dudes. I didn't have any gay professors, teachers. I didn't have any Jewish teachers, and I did okay. In fact, I did better, and I technically did the best in English, who was a white dude, but he was straight. But I did better in history, and it wasn't taught by a straight white dude.
Maybe you're just a really good student.
That's also true. You know why? Because I'm smarter than you.
You're so smart, Jason.
There's a battle over campaign signs going on right now for and against marijuana sales in Federal Way with Proposition 1, which, if passes, would allow recreational marijuana sales within the town city limits. They were one that had the moratorium on board. It's a ridiculous position that they were taking, but it's one that could be figured out with Proposition 1. Tom Cantrell is not a fan of Proposition 1. He is anti-marijuana shops in his city, so he decided to put up a huge electronic road sign that simply says, please vote no on Prop 1.
I wanted to put a sign up, and I wanted it to be seen well, and I wanted to call attention to Prop 1. I think it's free speech. The bad news is the city doesn't.
Yeah, well, the city doesn't necessarily have anything to say about free speech per se. They did say you've got a sign that violates our sign code that limits political signs to a maximum of 2 by 3 feet. So he refused and now is getting fined, but only getting fined $300 a day.
I don't think that any drug should be classified as recreational in front of our kids.
Okay, we got that. Think about the children. Yeah, okay. Proposition 1 supporters saw this and they didn't like it because I guess he's keeping up the sign. He'll pay the fee. Maybe he'll challenge it in court. But Proposition 1 supporters are all like, okay, well, then we're going to do exactly what you're doing. Except we're going to be putting up a message that says, please vote yes on Proposition 1. Allison Taylor put up that sign. They said, yeah, we'll take our sign down if he does.
The Yes campaign is fully prepared to take our sign down as soon as Mr. Cantrell takes his down.
And they're also getting fined the $300 a day. Both of them say, hey, we're going to pay the money to get our message out.
We are prepared to fight fire with fire. This is not something that we're excited about, but we are prepared to make sure that the messaging is equal.
Yeah, and look, she's got a point. The dude who put it up first, he's in the wrong. He's 100% in the wrong. And I'm glad there's someone else out there who's going to put up the sign to at least counter the message to have an even playing field. Now, I don't know if I'm necessarily inspired by a sign that says, please vote for Proposition 1 or please don't vote for it. That seems like a non-innovative way to get your message out, but it's, you know, it's on an electric sign.
Such a nice sign. You know, it's high tech. It's digital. You can put anything you want on it, and that's the boring message you put across.
It's just so boring.
And for getting fined $300 a day, hey, hire me. I'll stand out there. That's $1,500 a week. I'll do that.
No, that's not a good example. It's not how it works.
What do you mean?
They're getting fined for putting up a big sign. Why would they put you up with a big sign?
Because they won't get fined if it's just me sitting there holding the sign.
You still can't put up that big of a
sign. Give me a different sign.
Okay.
I'm cheaper than the big fine for the electronic sign.
You're a sellout is what you are, because you would go to any side of that campaign.
Oh, yeah. Who's ever got more money?
I'm a vote. What am I? Please vote. I'm vote no on Proposition 1. Right?
I don't know.
Oh, no. I'm vote yes on Prop 1. Voting yes on Prop 1 means you do approve of the sale of recreational marijuana. So
I'm
a vote yes.
Yeah, that's cool.
Finally, in Everett last night, Tim Eyman, pain in the backside, got into it with some state officials. He is the sponsor of Initiative 976, which is one that I also support. It returns us to $30 car tab fees.
The valuation system that we have is so fraudulent that the voters voted against it and repealed it in 1999. They repealed it again in 2002, yet like a character in the movie, in the TV show Walking Dead, it's just basically resurrected itself, and it's the same valuation system that the voters have voted twice against, and for the last 2.5 years, our elected officials haven't done anything about it.
He is 100% right. The way that Sound Transit 3 was passed was despicable. It just was, and they know it. They were dishonest and all of that, which is why Tim Eyman made the case last night in front of the state transportation chair, Steve Hobbs, Democrat from Lake Stevens. He came back with a laundry list of impacts to transportation projects that Initiative 976 would have.
$300 to $400 million hit to the transportation budget, $700 million hit yearly to Sound Transit. We're not even talking about defeasement of bonds and the penalties you have to pay. So it's more than that. And the $60 million affecting our communities across the state, from Wapato to Yakima to Granite Falls. Transportation benefit districts that benefit their communities that they decided on their own.
Let's stop pretending that you care about Wapato. Okay, they care about their own districts and they care about funneling as much money to 976 to Sound Transit as humanly possible, and 976 gets in the way of that. Except Hobbs decided to just make a really, really bad argument.
It's the fact that this is an attack on the major tenet of our democracy in this election. You know, Tim, I love your shirt because it says let the voters decide. Well, 700,000 people decided in 2016 to invest in transportation infrastructure. That happened in three counties. You can't be any clearer than that. It was decided by the voters.
No. It was decided by the voters in a campaign that was dishonestly put out there. And that's what we've learned from this lawsuit against Sound Transit for their campaign. They lied and withheld information as to the actual cost that car owners would have to pay with their car tab fees. They knowingly used an old calculation, and they knew most people were never going to look at the fine print that's so fine most people wouldn't be able to find it on a website. Oh, we got this calculator up online, a calculator up on, where was it? That's not what they were using it for, and Iman took issue with Hobbs there.
I would really challenge, is it actually a vote if they lie to you in order to get the vote? We were told it was only going to be $80 extra in your car tabs. But when you're getting the bill now, and it's $300, $500, $800, people are a little upset about that. And I think it's totally appropriate that when your government ends up lying to you to get a yes vote, it's totally appropriate to go back to those voters and say, now that you know the truth, now that you know how dishonest this tax is, do you think this is fair?
100% correct. I totally, totally, totally agree with him. This is what happens. This is the challenge that happens when you decide to push dishonest campaigns on Washingtonians. And the funny thing is, if they were even honest with the calculations that people would get hit with, I do think it would win. But they decided to be dishonest. It landed them in a lawsuit, and now it's landing them in having to deal with Initiative 976, which I 100% back. 1-800-465-8770 is the text line if you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. President Trump's re-election campaign was so mad at the Project Veritas tapes by James O'Keefe showing bias at CNN, they have vowed to sue for what they're calling a substantial payment of damages. This is a bad idea. As much as I agree with the point that they're trying to make about bias at CNN, this is not a good idea for a whole host of reasons. And I think it's really important for conservatives to not back something like this, as much as I know we want to, just to send a message that the kind of bias that's displayed at CNN or the New York Times or wherever, as much as I know we want to call it out, this is the wrong move. Now, Trump's lawyer, Charles Harder, wrote this four-page letter to the network. And in the letter, he wrote, quote, "Never in the history of this country has a president been the subject of such a sustained barrage of unfair, unfounded, unethical, and unlawful attacks by so-called mainstream news as the current situation. Accordingly, my clients intend to file legal action against you to seek compensatory damages, punitive damages, injunctive relief, reimbursement of legal costs, and all other legal and equitable remedies to the maximum extent permitted by the law." Now, the CNN spokesperson, Matt Dornick, according to the Washington Examiner, put out a statement that said, or the Washington Times, excuse me, said, "This is nothing more than a desperate PR stunt and doesn't merit a response." Now, some of that is actually correct. It is a PR stunt. I don't think it's desperate. I actually think it's really fun. And I think it's really important. And I think it's really smart. Here's the deal. We know that when the president goes after the news media and the bias, we have a conversation, a sustained one, about whether or not the media is treating him unfairly. And they very clearly are treating the president unfairly. They're treating not just Trump unfairly, but Republicans unfairly. And these are one of those issues that really gets people mad. Mad enough to maybe vote when they otherwise wouldn't. The media does not know how to talk about Trump supporters. But one thing that Trump supporters believe in is that they are mistreated by the media, a media that doesn't understand them. And so it's rather ironic, I suppose, that a media that doesn't understand Trump and Trump supporters leads to people getting upset because they don't understand them. This resonates with Trump supporters. Calling out media bias resonates with Trump supporters. It resonates with Republicans in general. Because the truth of the matter is, because there are so few actual conservative media outlets, with the exception of a Fox News, which is obviously the biggest one, and arguably the Wall Street Journal, and then you've got some of the other lesser-known networks like OAN or Newsmax, Blaze. The fact of the matter is, it feels like there are a lot of liberal outlets telling liberal stories from liberal perspectives, and very little for us. And we finally get to call that out, we get a little bit excited. Now, ultimately, again, I do think that this is just a PR stunt, and he's not going to win, nor should he. You get to be biased. Imagine the power to censor in the hands of your enemy. He's taking a position on bias because he does not like the coverage. Now, if he likes the coverage, then one can make the argument that they're biased in his favor. So I don't necessarily want to enable or empower any Democratic politician to go ahead and sue Fox News or OAN or KTTH because we're not treating them fairly or we're treating them with bias. I do think that we need to have a better conversation in this country in general, including on our side, about differentiating between news and analysis, understanding when bias is implied in the actual role of the person. I have a bias. I am a conservative talk show host, not a journalist. I'm not a journalist. I never claim to be a journalist. When I see comments on my blog calling me out and say, hey, you're a good journalist, I thank you so much. I'm not a journalist. I'm a talk show host. Now, I try to be fair, but I'm biased. You can be fair and biased. But I am paid to talk about the news. I am paid to give my opinion. Anderson Cooper calls himself a journalist. Jim Acosta calls himself a journalist. They should be called out because they clearly have a bias and they're clearly not journalists. Journalism, reporters, anchors, they're not supposed to provide you analysis. They can contextualize stuff, right? And it's on them to make sure they're contextualizing stories in a way that doesn't show their bias. There are a lot of really good people who do that, both on CNN and Fox, and really on all of the networks and in every newspaper and every radio station. There are some people who are able to do that really, really well. The difference is, over at CNN, they've decided to blend those lines a little bit too unclearly. They got muddled. In fact, CNN analyst April Ryan, she just pulled out of a gig where she should have never signed up for to begin with, moderating what's being called a grassroots fundraiser for Pete Buttigieg. Supposed to happen in D.C., I believe next month. $500 a pop for tickets. She got hit with a whole bunch of criticism, and that's when she pulled out. She claims that, I just thought it was an interview with Pete Buttigieg. I didn't realize that it was a fundraiser, and so I pulled out. So she decided to pull out. This is someone, however, who invited Pete Buttigieg to be a guest at the Congressional Black Caucus dinner back in September. She took a selfie with him, gushed over him. But she'll go on CNN and say she has no bias whatsoever. She's just a reporter. She has no bias. Of course she does. People who tell you they have no bias are the ones who are lying. 1-800-465-8770. Send me a text on the NumMeter Text Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770.